This is a typical situation. We're looking at construction sites where we have water that needs to be removed, and they usually just send it into a stilling basin. And I'm sure anybody here that knows when you have turbid water and you put it into a stilling basin, it's going to look the same after it goes through the stilling basin. So by law, they have to do this. Nobody's telling them that they have to clean it up to a certain degree. They just have to have the treatment system there, and they'll send it through a porous bag like this. And as I said, the turbidity that you measure going in is going to be about the same as going out, unless you have some chemical treatment. And what got us into this actually was some very large construction projects. Our DOT were had underway, and in order to do these projects, they had to have borrow pits, which, if you don't know, those are areas that they, I don't know why they say borrow so well, because they actually take it and they never give it back, but they use it for overpasses over highways and railroads. And in our eastern counties, that means you're in groundwater, so they have to pump that water constantly to get the soil. And lots of times they have problems with turbidity, especially when they run into soils that have a lot of montmorillonite and smectite. And that's what we're going to deal with. This is a particular soil that was causing a lot of trouble. And the key element here is the smectite. You see here, it's only 20%, but that was enough to cause them to have turbidities in the 300 to 400 NTU level, which is like a strong T, if you want to think of it that way. We used a number of different polymers, and I'm not going to go into all of them. This is some examples of the ones we used. But the key for today's talk is that we were looking at different charge densities and different, as well as the different charges, the cationic, net neutral, or non-ionic, and the anionic. Now, if you know polymers, you know anionics are the ones that we generally are trying to use in the environment, because the cationics have some toxicity issues in aquatic environments. But we decided to ignore that and instead just look at this from a chemical point of view and deal with the aquatic toxicity later. And I'll get to that at the end of the talk. This is a cautionary tale. We generally screen polymers for activity in a soil by throwing a certain amount of the soil in a jar and mixing it up with PAM. And when we get a good flocculation, we know that that's a PAM that might work for that soil. And that's what we did. In this case, you can see the three different PAMs. Even the anionic seemed to be working fairly well, even though it didn't seem to work in the field when they tried to treat the water. And so we tried to get at that a little bit by changing the way that we did the screening, and that is to actually mix up the soil and then decant the supernatant and get rid of all the heavy particles. And you can see the screening results were quite a bit different, and particularly for the anionic. You can see we had some reduction in turbidity up to about a half a part per million, and then we lost that treatment effect and had pretty unacceptable treatment for the turbidity. But if you look at the other two curves, they did look pretty good. The neutral, even on the supernatant, seemed to work pretty well. And of course, the cationic, as you'd expect on a negatively charged clay, is going to work pretty well. So we sort of dropped out the anionic for our field testing and further testing. But we continued to do more screening and looking at the charge density as well as the molecular weight. In this case, all the green lines are anionic, and they're all not working all that well. You can see the turbidity is dropped a little bit at the low concentration, but then we can't get any further, and so we're not dropping the turbidity as low as we need to, regardless of the molecular weight in this case. There was a treatment effect from molecular weights, but it was kind of inconsequential based on our goal to get the turbidity down by 90 or 95%. Notice the neutral, the blue line, and the two cationics that we tried in this particular screening worked really well, even at a part per million low concentrations. So most of our work was with that. But this is the slide that actually has to do with the title of the talk, and the rest of the talk is sort of related, let's say. To get at this issue of what's happening with that supernatant and the smectite in particular in it, we took a look at some of the soils that we've dealt with, as well as this Plymouth soil that I mentioned earlier. It has about 20% smectite, and we screened it against anionic, neutral, and cationic PAMs, all high molecular weight, with different charge densities. So we start back here with the 50% anionic charge density, and we end up over here with the 50% charge density of the cationic PAMs. And you can see we got a nice, with the Plymouth soil, we got a nice curve with very little activity with the high negative charge. And then as that charge got closer to neutral, we got pretty good reduction in turbidity. And then the cationics were very good at reducing the turbidity. So we were getting flocculation once we got out of the negative range in the anionic PAMs. And then we had another soil that also had some smectite in it, but it had more iron in it than the Plymouth soil. And in another study that we published, we showed that the extractable iron seemed to have a good correlation with the ability of PAMs to flocculate and for the soils we have in our state. And so we did have a little bit more reduction, even though the anionics weren't nearly as good as the cationics. And then we have a soil here that's typical of a Piedmont soil in North Carolina and up and down the East Coast with much higher iron, and even though it did have low smectite too, the high iron we think was helping to get the flocculation to work with the anionic PAM. So we didn't get quite as much of a reduction with the anionic PAM as we did with the other soils that had smectite, and especially when we had very low extractable iron. So that's one of the things that we looked at. So effectively, we've eliminated anionic PAMs from our arsenal to treat turbidity in our eastern parts of the state. This is another cautionary tale, I guess. A grad student was sort of on the ball and noticed that when he mixed up some dilute solutions and then partied all weekend and came back to do his experiments on Monday, things didn't look the same, and it wasn't just because of the weekend. So he actually did some experiments to show that the polymer in dilute solution, this is a half part per million, actually had reduced activity very quickly when it was left to age in the lab before we ran the experiments. And so we've also done the experiments on concentrated solutions, and they don't have this problem. It's just the dilute solutions. So if you're out there doing these experiments, don't mix up a bunch of dilute solutions and plan on using them except for maybe that day or the next day, because you'll lose your activity. All right, and then we've gone on to do the field testing of basically the screening that we did. And this is really the proof of the pudding, I guess, because this is a simulated Stilling Basin, or actually simulated borrow pit we have here. We got soils in from that Plymouth area that have that the clay problem, turbidity problem with the suspended clays, and we've made up a real solution of actual sediment and water. And then we pumped it over into the Stilling Basin just using a standard pump. So this is our simulated Stilling Basin. And in the meantime, we could treat this water by adding the PAM, which is mixed up here. We just pump it with a peristaltic pump into the intake, and we get the treatment of the turbid water, send it into the Stilling Basin, and we did a lot of experiments on physical barriers and other things, and I can tell you the answer is it doesn't matter. If you do the chemical treatment, you don't need anything else. You get pretty good treatment, as you'll see. During the experiment, we basically pump until we get steady state flow. And so here, these are the flows you're seeing here. You can kind of ignore I'm not going to talk about the sediment bag, but steady state flow. And you can see, no matter where you were in this treatment train, we were having the same turbidities. And that's kind of what I was saying earlier, that when you have these fine suspended sediments, any kind of physical settling approach is not going to work. You're either going to have to do a filtration or a chemical treatment. And in most cases, chemical treatment's a lot more economical. So here we are with our results, and the cationic material got over 99% reduction in suspended materials and turbidity, which is what we're looking for. We got turbidities down from 800 into the tens and lower. So very good treatment effect. But what was interesting to us was, because this cationic doesn't have the problem of being somewhat toxic in aquatic environments, that we were very interested that the neutral, which does not have that problem, is almost as effective. And as far as I know, I don't know anybody else that's been looking at neutrals for this type of of treatment. So we're kind of excited about that, but again, the toxicity is always the bottom line, because this water is being discharged into the surface waters of wherever you are, and you want to make sure it's not toxic, even if it is clear. So let's take a look at some of the results of the sensitive test we did basically in our state, and I think it's a pretty standard procedure when you're discharging water into the waters of the state from a manufacturing plant or a wastewater treatment plant. You have to show that it's not toxic, and one way of doing that is to do a Sari Daphnia test. These are the little water fleas. They're very sensitive to any kind of contamination, and it's a reproduction test. It's not a LD50 test. It's a reproduction test, so it's very sensitive. These are very sensitive tests. So you expose them for 7 days, and you see how many babies they have, basically. And believe me, they're probably not having much fun, because they're all alone in there having babies. These are asexually produced. So this is what you do. You put them in these little individual cells, and you replace our standard protocol in our state is to replace the solution every day, so you get a new dose. And this is a water flea right there, and those are the neonates right there on the back. So what they do is they count after 7 days how many you expect to have, and generally you expect to see 20 or 30 produced over that period of time. So what did we find? Well, there's a lot of information on this graph. Let's just focus on the solid lines here. The red is the cationic, and here's the anionic, and here's the neutral. So you can see that in terms of the number of neonates on this axis, which is the relative toxicity, as the concentration was increased, we had a fairly steep slope on the cationic. So as expected, it didn't take very much to knock them out fairly quickly. The anionic was not nearly as toxic, but it did have some toxicity at higher doses, generally way above anywhere where we'd be treating, certainly. But what's really exciting is the neutral, which is our only option other than the cationic on some of these suspended clay materials, was fairly non-toxic. Now, if you look at the dotted lines, we also know that when we're using these materials, we're putting them into turbid waters. And so we attempted to see if the turbidity itself would either mitigate the toxicity or have some other interaction, because we had some evidence actually that of another test where we found that the turbidity itself was toxic. And when the PAM flocculated the turbidity, it actually reduced the toxicity of the solution. So not only was the PAM not toxic, but it actually reduced the toxicity of the existing suspended clays. Unfortunately, we were not able to generate a good stable turbidity, and so the effects here were not what we expected. We actually had more toxicity where there was the turbidity. In these two cases, not much of a change in the neutral. We're going to do some more tests and try to make sure we can get some stable turbidities. We do measure the turbidity at the end of each day or when they replace the solution, and we knew that turbidity had dropped from 60 to 10 in all these solutions. So the end is we now have an approved list in our state for using polyacrylamides to mitigate waters that are impacted by turbidity before they're discharged into waters of the state. And we're very excited about that, because it was all science-based. It wasn't some of the other states I know have regulations about this, but they're not really based on toxicity, which is what I'm glad to see we have done. So in conclusion, we have found that anionic PAMs work well in a lot of sediments, and we've published that elsewhere, but not where we have montmorillonite and other types of clays that are resistant to settling and reacting with the anionic PAMs. The fine materials will give you a different assay if you use them separately versus just the whole soil. So if you're going to do screening and you have turbidity problems, you might want to separate them and use supernatant as we did. The neutral and the cationic both worked in our case, but we would recommend the use of the neutral because of the lower toxicity profile for that material. And I guess with that, I'll take any questions. Yes.
Did you try adding calcium or magnesium salts to prevent anionic PAM?
We have done that and have not really had much luck in improving the reaction. And I was surprised at that, actually. But a previous graduate student did a bunch of screening with different levels of gypsum, which is a typical compound that's used in conjunction with this, and really didn't see any improvement. Right.
That one is fairly dramatic and it continues, which I have not seen. Was that a stop solution, and what was the water that was used to mix that up?
Well, that was DI water, and it was made from a stock solution, which would have been either 500 or 1,000 milligrams per liter. And when we remixed those and did the same assay, we got the same result. It was just when we diluted, it was just the procedure we were using. If we made up a bunch of cups with the diluted PAM and didn't add the soil for some period of time, then we got different results. And so that's what that was all about. Yeah, it was surprising. Yeah, even more surprising that my student noticed it. But I was glad he did, because we don't normally mix up dilute solutions anyway, but it was just the way he was doing it. So now we know never to do that.
I assume they were not stored in the open sunlight.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Would you join me in thanking Richard?